Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sustainable Finance Podcast. My name is Paul Ellis, and I'm your host for these programs about developments in this fast-growing industry. The Climate Talent Initiative is a foundation dedicated to de-risking pathways for skilled talent to enter the global climate change workforce. It was the brainchild of today's podcast guest, Roshan Paul, during his third major career change that brought him to work on climate change. Roshan has used his own experience of finding his way in the climate change sector to create opportunities for others as well. He asks those he works with to first consider the following question: how can I make a living and make a difference? Hello, Roshan, and welcome to the Sustainable Finance Podcast.
Hi, Paul. Nice to be here. Thank you for having me. I'm very much looking forward to the conversation.
I am too, because there's so many people, as you know, out there that are interested in contributing to the work on climate change. And hopefully some of them will be able to take advantage of your advice around opportunities. So now, personally, you've made three career choices that have changed your whole life, not just your career. So if you will tell our followers about those choices and why you made them.
Absolutely. So the first choice was coming out of college. I came to the US for undergrad from India. And like most foreign students, I was looking at jobs in investment banking and management consulting. But my final year of college coincided with 9/11, which was followed by, in India, a lot of violence as well, ethnic riots, terrorism, and so on. And it just seemed like the world was on fire. And I could potentially do a lot more good, you know, doing something to try to work on that. And so I actually ended up turning down a job offer with a prestigious consulting firm and moving back to India to work in social entrepreneurship at a fraction of the salary. But really got, that was what got my start in working in social entrepreneurship. And it started about a 20-year career in social entrepreneurship that helped me understand, you know, what it takes to make a difference in the world. So that was the first choice. The second one, feel free to jump in if you like, but the second one was, you know, I'd spent 10 years working in social entrepreneurship, supporting a number of over 500 or so social entrepreneurs in every corner of the globe, and started to get the bug myself a little bit. And so decided that, you know, I'd sort of had a few experiences in graduate school as well as through work that made me feel that we need a better way to train people who want to work in social impact. And that I had a sense of what was needed based on my own journey, because, you know, all the people who thought I was crazy in my first choice of turning down a consulting firm to go back to India to work for a small nonprofit, those folks were now coming to me saying, hey, like, I want to do this too. Like, I'm a bit bored sitting in my cubicle here in this office. Like, what can I do to make a difference? And by that point, I was, you know, I was in a leadership role. I was traveling around the world for work. And it seemed like a good gig for a lot of people who were trapped behind their desks and, you know, in a big company. And so more and more people were saying, I want to do this too. And so I felt like I had a sense of what was needed. And so I decided to quit my job in Washington, D.C. and move to Nairobi, Kenya, to start a new nonprofit there that was going to be based in the Global South. And so that was the second kind of crazy choice where I turned down, you know, a job in the U.S. that was taking me to, you know, a green card and potential U.S. citizenship to move to Africa to start an NGO. You know, most people, again, thought that was a particularly crazy thing to do. So that was the second one. And, you know, we it worked out. So we built that organization, scaled up to three continents, but worked, you know, literally all around the world. And then about 10 years in, I decided to step down as CEO. So this is that sort of third life choice, and slowly start to shift towards working in climate change because that seemed like the existential issue of our time. And that was something I felt like I wanted to spend, you know, a sort of a piece of my life trying to make a difference on. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I just knew I needed to do something. Those were the three choices that I made that may seem counterintuitive to folks as well.
So, Roshan, some sustainable finance podcast followers may be considering these types of career decisions themselves today. There's a lot of change, as you well know, going on across the developed world, especially and in the global South. What do you think are the three most important things to consider when you're weighing the pros and cons of this type of career choice?
Thanks, Paul. I think some useful things to consider are, you know, how will you feel at the end of your career or at the end of your life if you continue on your current path and don't do something that's more in line with your values, right? It's like one of those like bumper stickers or like memes, you know, that, you know, at the end of our lives, what we look back on and usually what we regret are the things we didn't do, not the things we did. And this is a decision where I think that's not just a bumper sticker, but it's a useful projection for how you'll feel. Like you probably won't regret making a choice to do something that follows, you know, what you truly believe in, but you might regret if you don't do it. So I think that's one. I think the second thing I would say is that think about the fact that positive psychology, you know, which is a relatively new field, you know, is saying that like the key to happiness is really about serving others and doing something that's beyond your own sort of your own self and your own life and what brings benefit to you, right? That there's working on something that's greater than you is kind of really linked to your sense of personal fulfillment and satisfaction. But isn't that also what like every religious like tradition has been saying for millennia as well, that the secret to life is actually in service? And so my perspective is if faith and science can agree, then we should pay attention to it, right? So if both faith and science are saying that like happiness and fulfillment comes from, you know, doing something bigger than yourself, I think that that's something that, you know, the wisdom of the ages, let's say, plus the wisdom of modern science is telling us to do. And then the third thing is that there's never going to be a right time in your life to make a decision, right? Like there's always going to be a lot of reasons not to do it or a lot of things that you can postpone. So don't put it off for later because there's never going to be a better time down the road as well. Take the jump now. The world needs you.
Well, I think that's an especially, the third point you've made is especially important for our audience today because your third major life pivot brought you to work on climate change, but you found it hard to break into this field. So why was that? And what are you working on now to make this kind of transition into climate-focused work easier for other people?
Yeah, so when I decided that I wanted to work in climate, I felt a little bullish about my prospects because I had built and scaled an organization from a startup in Africa, you know, to working in Latin America and Asia and Europe and North America too. We really ran projects all around the world. So I felt I had a lot of things to bring to the table. I also have an Ivy League degree. And so I thought, I'm a catch, right? I'll get a job. But it was really hard. Like I applied to a number of positions and, you know, didn't hear back at all. And so I started to look a little deeper into why that might be the case and realized, you know, that the climate field historically has largely valued sort of scientists, policy wonks, you know, academics on the one hand, and on the other hand, sort of activists, campaigners, you know, movement types of folks. And so that's the largest kind of groups of people working in climate change historically. But organizations need to grow and need to scale. And if they're going to do that, then you need a broader base of talent and a broader set of skill sets than scientists and activists. And so that's why I found it hard to break in. But it's also something that the climate field is now starting to come to grips with and start to realize that actually we need a lot of different kinds of skills if this field is going to scale up to meet the you know, the demands that we have at the moment. So you asked, like, what am I doing to make this transition easier for others? Based on that theory of change, that if we don't build sustainable and scaled organizations, we won't meet our climate targets, and that we need a broader base of skills to do that. Based on all of that, and the understanding that we need skills at all levels, we need white collar sort of leadership and management skills, we need kind of blue collar technical labor, laborers and so on. I'm now looking at developing and launching programs that bring these additional skill sets into the climate field as well. So, along with several partners, we launched a fellowship for finance professionals, but other partners have also launched fellowships for lawyers in Africa or communications professionals in Southeast Asia. And we're weighing up other sort of needed skill sets in this area as well. So we're going to keep innovating and creating different programs, but it's always looking sort of forensically at what are the skills that we need and how do we find those skills from outside the climate field and invite folks and find ways to de-risk pathways for people, to join this this movement as well.
Okay, well, you've partially answered our next question, which is about one of the programs that you launched, which is a career transition fellowship in climate finance. Mm-hmm. So I've been in climate finance for 20 years. I know why I'm in this field, but why that kind of focus for people who are searching for some way to contribute to the climate issues? And then if you would also share your thoughts about how it works and the results that you've achieved so far.
Yeah, so it was identified by the funders as well as the folks working in this field that finance is one of the most sort of needed skill sets for that the climate field doesn't have as well. And that, I think the amount of finance that's projected to need in order to meet our climate targets is, on the order of $1 trillion or something like that. It's a vast figure. And so if we are to mobilize that kind of funds, and if we are to direct and target those funds appropriately, what we need is, folks with a background in finance to help us to do that. And so the program that we designed, says that we work with nonprofits working on the climate finance movement to ask them what finance skills are they missing and what are they looking for. And based on that, we design a job description. And then we go out into the finance industry and find professionals who meet those job description requirements, but are also keen to make that transition. Like they are interested in moving to work in climate finance. But it's risky as well, right? It's risky to make that kind of career choice if you've never worked in the nonprofit side of things. And this is sort of targeted at mid to senior level folks. So, they tend to have other responsibilities as well. And so, making that kind of jump is something they think twice or thrice about. It's also risky for the nonprofit to bring in someone from a completely other sector with a different set of understandings about, professional work and so on, and who don't understand necessarily, what makes change in the world. And so what we say is we'll de-risk that by providing a guarantee for a year for that person's job. And then we scaffold that sort of guarantee with, courses in climate change and leadership development and nonprofit management with executive coaching, with building a global network of other people making this kind of decision as well. And so we scaffold it with a number of things that make it a bit of an easier transition for both the individual as well as the organization that they're joining. And the hope is that at the end of the year, they've basically dated for a year. And at the end of the year, they decide to get married. Right? So the nonprofit, offers this person a full-time job and they're happy to stay on. So that's our goal with this program. We're about 10 months into our first cohort of 19 finance professionals from about 12 countries. So far it's been reasonably successful, I think. And we'll see how it goes over the next few months and what the final sort of results are, but it looks very promising so far.
Oh, that's terrific. Well, I'm glad to hear about that. And we'll check back in with you on the results after the first year and where people have found places to work and that they're whether they, how they're doing in terms of their own expectations over time. But for now, let's go back to the elephant in the room, Roshan, and that is when people think about working in the social, climate, or environmental impact fields, how can they earn a living while making a difference?
Thank you for asking that, Paul. I'm glad you asked it because this is the most common question I've received in the last 15 years. Okay. You know, I spent a decade helping people make these career transitions, wrote a book about it, traveled around the country doing book talks, especially with lots of students in, you know, grad students and undergrad students. And this is the question that always, always comes up. So I would suggest thinking about this in a few ways. First is that we tend to have this mental model when we think about like someone working in business versus someone working in nonprofits, that the business person's like this private equity lawyer and the nonprofit person's this like community organizer or someone in a soup kitchen or something, right? Like I've tested this with many people and that's the image people have. But we don't think about it the other way. We're not comparing like, you know, a barista at Starbucks with like the head of a, you know, international development organization who makes over, you know, over $500,000 a year, right? Like, or a university president who's making $1 million a year, right? Like, so we're not comparing it the other way around. And I think that's a mental model as well that we have. And so a great sort of counterfactual is, you know, me and my sister, for instance, okay? So we have this, make it very personal. My sister and I have, you know, we're a year apart. We have the same upbringing. We went to the same college for undergrad and we both went to Ivy League grad schools. I have spent my entire career in nonprofits, and she spent her entire career in a Fortune 100 company, and she's done very well for herself. For the first 15 years or so, she made much more money than I did, though I would argue I had a slightly better quality of life for a number of reasons. But now that we're both about 20 years into our career, we actually make roughly the same amount of money. And I think you could fairly say that there are many, many more jobs that pay like hers in the private sector than in the social sector, and that would be accurate. But I wanted to get the point across that, like, this isn't, you know, a starvation sector either, right? And then another sort of example, and this is from India, is between, like, I have someone who's sort of a close to my family who works as a head of sales in a major hotel, like a big international hotel chain that everyone's heard of. And when I was hiring a entry-level person for my nonprofit social business in India, we actually paid more for an entry-level person, you know, who's about 10 years younger than what this person who was doing sales at a big hotel was getting paid. So again, like there's like this mental model that's not actually always accurate. So that's my first thing. The second way to think about it is that there's never been more opportunities to do work that makes a difference, but also pays well, right? Like you could work in big financial institutions like the World Bank or multilateral banks. You could work in impact investing firms, in foundations, in development consulting. So basically every top consulting firm you've heard of has a nonprofit practice as well. Right. You could work in various kinds of capacity building or think tank like organizations. The senior levels in most large nonprofits pay very well. And of course, there's sort of impact facing jobs in big companies like chief sustainability officers or, you know, CSR kind of roles. So once you're looking around, you'll start to see a lot of different opportunities. A third thing I would say is that, you know, when I talked about that finance fellowship and the you know, people leaving finance jobs to come work in nonprofits, but the median pay cut that we found people took was about 15%. And that's a lot less than what, you know, everyone's like assumption was going into this, right? So again, it's like a lot of people were surprised at that, but actually professionally run nonprofit organizations or social businesses don't pay that much less, and so in many cases will pay more than a private sector roles as well. And then my last point on this is that it's more philosophical. Like I think that there's a difference between making a living and getting rich. And you know, you'll never get as rich as an investment banker or a corporate lawyer in this space, but that's not what the majority of private sector jobs are anyway, right? And the importance, so the importance of sort of getting rich or making a lot of money also varies in your life, right? In your 20s and maybe early 30s, it probably matters less, you know, and you can take more risks. Then there's a period, let's say mid-30s to mid-50s, where, you know, the amount of money you make matters a lot because you're raising a family or you're starting to think about your own long-term nest egg. But then maybe once your kids are out of college or you're in your last decade of work, you know, money starts to matter less than other things like meaning or legacy, how you want to spend your time, things like that. So I think there's many ways to think about this and that, like, and it's you know, there are many more opportunities than people think.
Okay, well, Roshan, this has been great. I really appreciate the examples that you've offered, as well as the focus that you're bringing to the opportunities that are out there in this much broader community within the impact world that is nonprofit as well as for-profit. One of the things that we have done on the podcast is we've featured organizations that are recruiters for the industry, both sustainable finance and sustainable development, through organizations like Acre, for example. And those are career opportunities for people at various stages of their development. So, Roshan, I'm sure we're going to have a lot of our followers that will want to follow up with you about things that we've discussed in today's program. So how can our followers learn more about your work, and how can they get in touch with you regarding questions that they have about the topics that we've discussed in today's episode?
Absolutely. Thank you, Paul. The best way to get in touch with me is probably through LinkedIn. So feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn and send me a message there. To learn more about my work, or particularly if you're really interested in this topic of career transitions, I wrote a book a couple of years ago called The New Reason to Work. Okay. So check out The New Reason to Work on Amazon or wherever. And and feel free to take a look at that. I love to hear when people have read the book and want to get in touch as well. So if you read the book and you enjoy it, please get in touch as well. And then thirdly, I write a newsletter called Work Out Loud. It's on Substack, and I'm always happy to have more readers and followers there as well. So find me on Substack at Work Out Loud, and feel free to follow along.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Roshan Paul. And if you would send us links both to the book and to your newsletter, that will be great. We can attach those to the listings and the posts for the episode. And we really appreciate your work at the Climate Talent Initiative, and thanks for joining us in today's episode. And to our followers, join us again next week. I'm your host, Paul Ellis, and this is the Sustainable Finance Podcast.